Hey, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is Bamasiya Daf Kuf Dalid. We are holding on Daf Kuf Gimel and Beis. We are at the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Gimel and Beis. Today's share is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children, and Leila Nishmas's mother, Golda Basimcha, Alea Shalom, and Hashem Shaven Aliyah. Also by Daniel Sadian for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Atzlacha for our soldiers and our captives. We thank both sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. Seems like an appropriate time to specifically thank both sponsors for all the Achzakas HaTorah that they do over the course of many, many, many months, and in Dr. Lander's case, many, many years. We thank them for all of their help with sponsoring the Shiurim. So today what we're going to discuss is the following. First, the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Gimel and Beis is going to talk about if a tree in the field gets cut down or a mayan in the field dries up, can they change the terms of the Arisus agreement? Meaning I agree to be an artist in a field because it has a tree in it or because it has a mayan in it. Now it doesn't. So now maybe the terms should change and I shouldn't have to pay you as much. I shouldn't have to pay the Bala Sada as much. Then the Gemara is going to discuss two different explanations why we assume that the choker was insisting on a mayan, and it's not just the same, it's not just the name of a field, meaning we have other cases, other brises, where people say something about a particular field, and we say, yeah, we don't really hold them to it, it's just describing, it's just a name that they call the field by, but it's not actually descriptive of what the field actually produces. How come in our Mishnah we think it is descriptive of what the field actually is supposed to have in it? Then the Mishnah in the middle of Amud Aleph is going to talk about it. What if an aris was lazy? He just didn't plant the field. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. So what does he owe the Baal Asada? The Gemara is going to have five examples where the Chachamim are Doresh Lashon Hedyot. The first of those examples is from our Mishnah. Doresh Lashon Hedyot means that if people use a certain terminology in the typical business deal, that we actually hold them to it. That's going to be something that terminology is going to be binding. Then on Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to tell us a story relating to the practice of doubling the amount in a ksuba, that they used to have a practice. We have a similar practice nowadays. They used to have a practice that when it comes to how much the girl is actually bringing into the marriage, they would exaggerate. So sometimes they would exaggerate by actually assessing what she has, and then they would write double that amount in the ksuba. So what if a man says to his family right before he dies, write a ksuba for 400 for my daughter? What does he mean? Does he mean 200, 400? Does he mean 400, 800? Right? Meaning, how do we interpret what he said? So then the Gemara is going to tell us stories of an aris not doing what he was supposed to do. That either he leaves part of the field not worked, or he plants the wrong thing in the field. So that's going to bring us pretty much to the end of the daf. At the very end of the daf, we're going to have two machlokas between Rava and others about an iska that's palga milva and palga pikadon. So in case you missed Ezu Neshech, don't worry, we still have some iska discussions that are coming up at the end of the daf and beginning of tomorrow's daf. So let's begin with the Mishnah on the bottom of daf kuf gimel amud bey. So says the Mishnah, hamakabal sad mechaveru vihi beis hashlachin o beis ha'ilan. If a person receives a field as an aris or as a choker, and the karka is not the rainwater is not sufficient to water the karka, it needs to be you need a spring of water to water the field, or it's a beis ha'ilan that produces fruits. There's a tree in the field that produces fruits, and then yavish ha'mayan v'nixas ha'ilan, the mayan that you used to water that field dried up, or the tree that you were relying on to produce all these fruits got cut down. So the deal of the chakirus is still in place. Meaning the chakirus was that I'm going to pay you 100 bushels of wheat for each year, but I thought I was going to get payros from this tree, or I thought it would be easier to grow the wheat in this field because I thought there was going to be a mayan over here. Doesn't matter. I still have to pay you based on the original terms of agreement. But if I don't just say sade beis hashlachin, sade beis ilan, but I say this sade beis hashlachin, this sade beis ilan, so yavish ha'mayan, niksas ilan, menakalam, menchakoro. then I'm insisting on it having that spring of water or that tree in the field. And if it doesn't, we can renegotiate the terms of our agreement. I'm not going to be held to the original terms of the agreement. So when is he and when isn't he held to the original terms of the agreement? It all depends whether he says Sadeh Beis Shach, Sadeh Beis Ilan, or he says Sadeh Beis Ilan Zeh, Sadeh Beis Shachin Zu. That if he says this, that changes everything. So says Mara Hechi Dami, what exactly is the case in the Mishnah? If we're talking about that a large river that feeds all of the fields in the vicinity dried up, then why can't he change the terms of the agreement in the first case of our Mishnah? Namely, Makas Medinahi. After all, can't he say that this is a Makas Medina and everyone is being damaged from it, and we're going to have a Mishnah in the end of tomorrow's daf that a Makas Medina, the Choker can deduct from the Machkir. They can change the terms of the agreement when it's a Makas Medina. So if it's a Nahara Rabba, if it's a large river that dried up and that was supposed to really provide for the whole community, so that's a Makas Medina, and that should entitle me to change the terms of the agreement. So Rav Papa says, no, Diyavash Nahara Zuta. It was a small river that dried up. It was a spring, a local spring that fed this field, but not a large river that feeds all the fields in the vicinity. Da Amalei, the Machkir can therefore say to the Choker, Ibayulach La'atuya Bedavla, you can still get water from the larger river. Just get a bucket, get a pail, and start fetching water from the river. So therefore, that's your responsibility. Tosos in Dibra Maskel De'efshin, the top Tosos raises the question, why do you have to say that he's able to get the water from a large river? Even if he couldn't do that, the Choker cannot change the terms of the agreement because it's not a Makas Medina. So as long as it's not a Makas Medina, then you can't change the terms of the agreement. Meaning, why does he have to give him an explanation of how you could still water the field? Whether there is or isn't an explanation of how you could water the field. When it's not a Makas Medina, you're still stuck with the original agreements. That's Tosas Kasha. So Tosas has two tables. Number one, Tosas says that the Gemara is teaching me that even if all of the small rivers in the neighborhood dried up, which is a Makas Medina, still the Choker cannot change the terms of the agreement, because as long as he's able to get water from the larger river, he can't change the terms of the agreement. Meaning, even though Makas Medina does entitle the Choker to change the terms of the agreement, that's only a Makas Medina that cannot be overcome. That's when the Nahar Gadol in that community was ruined, and there's nowhere else to get it from. So there's no takana to the Makas Medina. There were grasshoppers that descended on the whole city and ate out all the produce in the field. There's nothing you could do about that. There's nothing you could change. So, but if one of two things happen, either it's only a local Makkah, not a Makkah's Medina, or it's a Makkah's Medina that can be overcome, then the Choker is stuck with the original agreement. That's answer number one of Tosos. Second answer of Tosos is that Eino Chinami, in a Chakiros agreement, the Gemara doesn't need to give this reason that, oh, you could have gone and schlepped water with a bucket. Because even if you could not have gone and schlepped water with a bucket, the agreement is still in place. But if it was an Arisus agreement, then we do need this reason. Because if he's not able to bring the water from the Nahar Gadol, so even if it's not a Makas Medina, he wouldn't be obligated to work on this field, and he wouldn't have to pay for it, because you don't have to bring from rivers that are at a very great distance. So that's why the Gemara says, with a little bit of Tircha, you could bring from the Nahar Gadol, and therefore you do have to work on this field. You are obligated to continue to work on this field if you are in Aris. So now the Gemara explains what's the case of all of the Mishnayos in this Perek, meaning as we started out at the beginning of the Perek by saying there are three types of arrangements you could have. You could have a Schirus, where Stam, I rent your field. You could have a Chakirus, where I'm giving you a set amount, a determined, predetermined set amount each year that I'm going to be working this field. And you could have an Arisus, where it's not a predetermined set amount, it's a set percentage of the yield from this field. So these cases are clearly not about schirus. They're about chakirus, they're about arisus, but are they about both? Are they about one, not the other? So Amar Papa, Hani Tarti Masnisa Kamaisa. So far, the first two Mishnayos in this parak, Mishkachsa Bein Bechachranusa, Bein Bekablanusa, are both about both chakirus and arisus. The only thing that's different, Tosus points out, is the din that we had in the first Mishnah of Kishem Shecholkin Betvua, Kacholkin Betevenu Bekash, that just like they divide a percentage of the grain, they also divide the straw. That doesn't make sense. That particular detail of the din doesn't make sense on the Chakirus, because the Chakirus is, I'm giving you X number of bushels, so there is no straw. As long as I give you that number of bushels of wheat, that's what the arrangement is. By an arisus, that halacha makes sense, because arisus is a certain percentage of the yield. So the chiddush is that the yield includes the straw as well. But other than that, all the halachos in the first Mishnah and in the second Mishnah can apply to both Chakirus and arisus. Mikan ve'elach, but all the other Mishnahis in this parak, the Isa b'kablanusa, the Isa b'chakranusa, and the Isa b'chakranusa, the Isa b'kablanusa, are about one or the other. They're either about Chakirus or arisus, and you have to figure out in each Mishnah which one we're actually talking about, but it's not going to apply to both. Okay, so now we had said in the Mishnah, Imamar lo chakor li sad beis hashlachin zeh, that if I didn't just say chakor li sad beis hashlachin, but when I hire the guy to work in my field, I say beis hashlachin zeh. So then if that mayan dries up, then the terms of the arrangement are going to be renegotiated. Va'amai, now why, if he said sad beis hashlachin zeh, can we renegotiate the terms? Can the choker renegotiate the terms? Le malay, can't the owner of the field tell the choker, shmabi al ma'amri lach? No, I was just telling you that this field is called a sada beis hashlachin. Not that it actually has to have a beis. Sometimes, you know, you have landmarks that are called by a certain name, even though it's not actually descriptive of that landmark, right? In our larger community over here, there's a shul called the White Shul. There is not a single white part of the outside, the exterior of the building. There's a shul called the Red Shul. It is also not red, meaning it's just that's what they call it. Okay, there's a history as to why they call it that way, but that's what they call it. So I call it a Sada Beis Hashlachin, but it's not I refer to my home as my mansion, you know, but it's not it's not necessarily descriptive of what it is. So the Gemara brings a raya that you can say that we do have elsewhere, where you could say that something is called by a name even though it's not actually descriptive. Milo Tanya, don't we have a brisa? Homel chaveru beis kor ofer ani mochalach. A guy says, I'm selling you karka that you could plant a kor of tvua in this karka. Af pishen v'alalesech, even though all you could plant in that karka is a half a kor, higiu, the purchase is binding because shalom machalo el shema, he v'udim skuri base kor. He was only selling him karka that's called the base kor. So as long as it's in fact called the base kor, as long as people actually refer to it that way, then that's binding. He's allowed to say that. Tos Rabbeinu Peretz raises the question: what do you mean v'udim skuri? Why don't you see what the purchase price was? Shouldn't that be able to give a clue as to whether it was really a base car or not? If he gave enough money for a base car, so then he should have to provide him with a base car. And if he only paid for a chati base car, so then he should in a chinami that he's stuck with the chati base car. So the Tosfos Beit Peretz suggests, well, there's eino nov the karko, so you're not going to be able to tell based on the price, because sometimes people are willing to way overpay for karka. They dafka want a piece of land in that location, and you can't get that location, you know, in any other way other than buying that particular land. But Ravina Peretz says, yeah, but that's still not satisfying, because the din of Bitul Mekach still applies to Karkaos. So, meaning if you sell a Karka for double what it's supposed to be, that's Batal HaMekach. So maybe there's no din of Ona'a with slight mispricing of Karka. But when it's double, then there is a din of Bitul Mekach. So over here, a Lesach in a base car is off by half. So shouldn't we say damim odim? So he writes that maybe the Tana is talking. This Tana holds that ena damim raya, that you can't bring a raya from money, but it's hard to understand why not. So he suggests maybe you could say that the karka that he sold him was more than the produced more than a lesach. Or less than that, but less than that which is roughly for a kor. So it turns out that it wasn't double. So if it wasn't double, maybe that we don't say damim odim when it wasn't actually double. Again, it's also delcha, because the Mishnah seemed to say that it's exactly half. Shein bo ella lesach, that it was a lesach and not a kor, like it was promised. But anyway, that's what the Braisa tells us, that you can give it a title even if the title is not descriptive, and you don't have to be held to the description, because it's not considered to be a description. Similarly, karmani mochalach, a guy says, I'm selling you a kerem, afal pishem bogafanim, there could be not a single vine in the entire kerem, higio, the guy has to take it, shalom achalo elishmavu, demiskuri karma, because he's only selling him something that's called a kerem, and as long as it's called a kerem, so that's binding. Pardes animochalach, if he says, I'm selling you a pardes of rimonim, an orchard of pomegranate trees, afal pishem bo rimonim, even though there are no pomegranates in that pardes, higio, the lokeach is stuck with it, shalom achalo elishma, because he's selling him something that's called a pomegranate orchard. Vuhu demiskri pardes, right? So I'm selling you a pomegranate, turns out it was a supermarket, right? I mean, that has nothing to do with actual pomegranates, but nevertheless, as long as everyone calls it that, so that's going to be what he's stuck with. So alma amrle shma bi alma amrilach. So achanami namele shma bi alma amrilach. So you see that you can tell the guy, I'm just selling you something that's called that, and it's just a name. It's just a name we give it. It's not actually descriptive. So how come in our Mishnah sada beis hashlachin we don't say it's just sada beis hashlachin zoo? We don't say it's just a name, and we assume that it has to actually have the mayan in it. So the Ritva raises the question: is that really a comparison? The Braisa was talking about a case, this Braisa, where we just had all these cases, was about that it never had rimonim in it. It never had vines in it. It never was a base core. So obviously, it was only a title. It wasn't something that was descriptive. In the case in our Mishnah, it had a mayan in it at the time that he said, Sada beis hashlachin zu. And now that mayan disappeared. So the worker can reasonably say, I assume that the mayan was part of the deal, that it's not just a title of the field, because it clearly wasn't just a title. There was an actual mayan in there. So obviously it wasn't just a title. How can we, therefore, it's a very strong kasha that the Ritva asks. How do you compare those two cases? So the Ritva suggests that maybe the Gemara is cognizant of that distinction, and adrabah, it's a kal v'chomer, that if a person sells a kerem, and it doesn't even have to have gefanim to begin with, just the fact that it's called a kerem is good enough for it to be a kerem. So a field that has a history, that it used to actually have a mayan, should for sure be good enough to be called a beis hashlachin, even though it doesn't currently have a mayan. So the Gemara is asking that is aware of that distinction, and is asking as a kal v'chomer, that if you'd be stuck with a kerem that never saw a vine in its life, and you'd still be stuck with it because it's called kerem, so certainly you have to accept the field that's called a beis hashlachin or a beis ha'ilan if it once had a mayan or it once had an ilan. But anyway, the Gemara is asking this stima. So why is it that in our Mishnah the guy can renegotiate the terms and say, hey, there's no spring over here, there's no tree over here? So Mishmua lo kasha. Hadam le machkir le choker, hadam le choker le machkir. Who's the one that made the condition when the Braisa says Shma bi'alma amrilach, that I'm just telling you the name of it? That's where the machkir is the one that said that to the choker, that asad debeis hashlachan ani machkir lach, that he could say, yeah, I was just giving you a name. But when the choker is the one that said to the machkir, the one who's going to be farming that field, said to the balasadeh that I want you to be machkir to me a asad debeis hashlachan, that's going to be binding. Why? Amrle machkir lechoker. The machkir could say to the choker, Shema bi'alma amrle. I'm just giving you a name that we call the field. Amrle choker the machkir, kpeda. But when it's the choker that's talking to the machkir, we assume he's being makpid about it. It's something that he's insisting on. So when it comes to the machkir doing the talking, that's not an insistence. That's just a name that they give it. The choker is the one doing the talking and says, Sada beis hashlachin. He's in fact insisting on it. Ravina, Amar Ravina is a second approach to this. We could say that they're both talking about a case where the machir is the one doing the talking, but mitakamer zeh lechal dekay begava askinan. The whole key in our Mishnah is not that he called it a beis hashlachin; it's that he said sad the beis hashlachin zeh. Whenever you have zeh, it always means mar be'etzba, that you're right there, you're right next to it, you're in it, you're there, you're able to point to it. Right? That's probably where the minna comes from, even though it doesn't say this in Shulchan Aruch. Then we say zos atar that people point at the Torah. Why the pinky and not the pointer? Okay, that's a mystery. But there is some minhag of pointing. It's not what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says you're supposed to bow toward the Torah, not that you're supposed to point to the Torah. Probably the minhag came from because it says zos. So whenever it says zos, always has an indication or an implication of being mora be'etzpa. So if they're standing right next to the field, the kaiba gavaskin, based on shachal lamalei lemeimar, why does he have to start describing the field? You see it; it's right there. So the kamalei based on shachin to kid the kaiba hashda, it must be that he's telling him, and I'm going to keep it that way. Meaning, if he says this is a field that has mayan, the guy sees it's a field that has a mayan. So it must be that the machkir is telling him it's a field that has a mayan, and that's part of the deal that it's going to always have that mayan. Otherwise, we could renegotiate the terms. So the Rishonim point out that Ravina probably, Tosfot points out that Ravina probably agrees to the first answer also. Meaning we had this question in our mission. We said you can renegotiate the terms if it was described as a Beis HaShlachan and it's no longer a Beis HaShlachan. And then we have this price that has all these cases where we say nah, names are just names, they're not descriptions. So answer number one is it depends who's doing the talking, the Machkir or the Choker. That was Shmuel's answer. Ravina says, even if the machkir is doing the talking, you could still distinguish if they're right next to the field or not right next to the field. So Ravina probably accepts Shmuel's answer also, that if the choker is the one doing the talking, then itaka is an insistence, and you don't have to say zu, you don't have to say zeh, and he's actually insisting that it be a beis hashlach. And that's how many of the Rishonim learn, that Ravina is just adding that even if the machkir is the one doing the talking, there's still room for a distinction. Okay, new Mishnah now. If a person, we said from this Mishnah and on, all the Mishnayos are either about Chakirus or about Arisus, not about both. So this Mishnah is about Arisus. Someone is Mekabel Sad Mechaveru, he's an Aris, he's a sharecropper, he's supposed to give a percentage of the crop to the owner, Vovira, and then he decided, you know what, I'm going to be lazy this year. I'm not going to plant, I'll just leave the field without anything. So there's nothing to split. Normally I'm supposed to give whatever, 33% to the owner, but 33% of zero is zero. So what do you do? So Shaminos HaKamru Yelassos Vinosilo. You have to assess how much this field could have or should have produced, and I have to provide the owner of the field with 33% of what this field could have or should have produced. Shakachos Ivlo Im Over Vlo Evira Shalim Bimitva. Because that's the original terms of the agreement, where he says, if I leave this field fallow, I leave this field with nothing, and I don't work on this field, then I will pay with Meitav. I'll pay the best of what this field could have possibly produced. So once we say that's why he's on the hook for that, because he says that phrase, that im over v'lo evad, hashalim b'mitvah, so the Gemara says, ooh, so you see that when a person includes a certain language, we take that language very seriously, and we're going to have five examples of where Tanayim will darshan the language that a person uses and hold him to that language. So number one, Rameir darshan the Lashon Hedyot. Hedyot just means that it's not a language that the Beis Din insisted on. It's not the legalese in the contract. It's what a guy says. So a guy said, Titania, the Bryce that tells Rameir, Omer, Imover v'lo avir ha-shalim b'mitvah, that if he says Imover v'lo avir ha-shalim b'mitvah, we hold him to that he's responsible for that. So Zvid points out that really Minadin, he shouldn't have to give him anything, because a sharecropper means a percentage of, and this is only a grama. He wasn't mazik biyadayim, he just didn't do anything. And nevertheless, because of this commitment, he's now going to be obligated to do it. Thing is, Rishonim struggle, Tosos, Rashi are both bothered. Why wouldn't he be held to what he said? I mean, that was his commitment. If it's your commitment, of course you got to be held to your commitment. So Tosos suggests that Dorish Loshon Hedut is that something that everyone would write is considered a mitanai Beis Din. That even a person who doesn't write it, it's as if he wrote it. So that's Lashon Hedyot. Meaning if every Hedyot, it's typical that every single time you have an Arisus agreement, they say, because that's just the way you become an Aris. So even if you left out that language is still binding, even though you didn't actually say it. The Ramban quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, says, no, The chiddush is that look who's doing the talking over here in the Brisa. It's Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is one that holds you always need tonight kafel, that in order for tonight to be binding, you need to say it both ways. Over here, he doesn't say he doesn't have a tonight kafel. So one might think that it has a din of an asmachta and it's not mechayev. But nevertheless, we're dorish lashon hadyot. Rabbi Meir is going to be moda that yichayev, even though you were not kofel the tonight, and even though the commitment was based on a tonight. So that's what the Ramban quotes from Rabbeinu Chananel. Ramban himself doesn't like that approach of Rabbeinu Chananel. He suggests a third approach from Rabbi Yehuda Al Bargaloni, who says that all of these things, Chum Darshan Lashon Hadyot, not only Kfi Pshuto, but similar to the way they would Darshan Psukim in the Torah, that in Moav Revlo Evra, Shad V'Mitva, doesn't say how much to pay, just that you're going to pay from the Mitzvah. You could have said that whatever decrease in value the Karka has from the fact that I left it alone, I'll pay that from the Mitzvah. And Yad Balashtara Tachtona, so that's what Meir has to tell me, that no, we Darshan Lashon Hedyot, that we assume that his kavana is, I would pay of the metav of what this field could have yielded, could have produced. So that's the special din over here. Okay, so those are three approaches of what exactly this means. That a mavlod rashay b'mitzvah. So Rabbi Yehuda, or all these cases rather of Dorish Lashon Hadyot. So Rabbi Yehuda Dorish Lashon Hadyot, a second example of Dorish Lashon Hadyot is Ditanya. We have a bright Rabbi Yehuda Amar Adam maybe Karban Ashir Al Ishto. There are certain karbanos that are karban olav yore, that a wealthier person brings a bigger karban, a more expensive karban, and a poorer person brings a less expensive karban. Let's say a woman becomes chayiv in a karban olav yore, like a karban yoledes or mitzora'as, and the husband is a wealthy guy. So even though the woman may come from a poor family, she may not have too much money of her own, he's got to provide for her a rich person's karban. V'chein kol karban she chayavis. That's true of any karban that she's obligated to bring, he has to pay for. Shekach kol sivla, because in the ksuba that he writes to her, it says, achrayus de islich alai min kadem stana, any chiyuv that you have, I will pay a lie, is on me to pay, min kademis dana, even the karbanos that you were chayiv before we ever got married, I'm going to pay for. So that's part of what he's agreeing to, whatever chovos she incurred, even prior to the nisuin. Third example, hilul hazaken, hayadorish lashon hadyot, hilul hazaken, darshan lashon hadyot, titanya, anshe elizandria, mekachanus nashoseim, ubishas kenisas nuchubo ba'in acherim, b'chot v'mosa mehen, that what would apparently often happen in Alexandria was people would do kidu with their wives, and then when it came time to bring them to the chuppah, another man would come and take the wife for himself and live with her happily ever after. So that seems like a crazy minhag, but that's what people used to do. So Bikshu Chacham Nasas Pnei Mamzerim. Chacham said, we have a major mamzerus problem on our hands, that here these people did kiddushin and someone else took the wife, so that's an eshes ish, all the children would be mamzerim. So Amar Lahen Hilazaken said, Hevilis Ksuba Simchem, let me see the ksubas that your mothers had before they were taken, from their first husbands. So vilo ksubas imran, they brought the ksuba umatzah shakasuv behen likasheti konsi luchupa heavy lili into, that this kiddushin should be chal when we enter the chuppah. So he said that saved the mamzerus issue, because the erusin was al tanai that they're going to be nichnas l'chuppah. If they never quite made it to the chuppah, then there is no erusin, there is no kiddushin, she's not an eshes ish, and therefore the children are not going to be mamzerim. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha yedarish lashon hadyot. Rabbi Shua ben Karcha was a fourth tana who darshan lashon hadyot. Titanya, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha omer hamalves chavero. If a person lends his friend a certain amount of money, and the lova didn't pay back at the designated time, and now the malva wants to take a mashkon from the lova, so the way to do it is you send a shliach bezin into the lova's house to take the mashkon. Lo yimashkinenu yoser michalvo. You can't take something that's worth more than the actual loan. Shekach kosev loan. The reason you can't do that is because when the malva returns the mashkon to the lova as needed, that's a pasuk in the Torah, that if the lova needs the item that you took as a mashkon, so the Torah Gemara says, "Vim ish ani hu lo tishkav ba'avoto, hashev tashiv lo asavot." You have to give, if it's his pajamas you took as a mashkon, you need to give it back to him every night so that he could have his pajamas. So you need to give him back the mashkon. So when you give him back the mashkon, kach kosev lo, the lover writes, tashlum to di isloch alai, the payment that that you have, that you're able to take from me, kol kavel dichi, corresponds to this mashkon. So since that's the language they use, you can't take a mashkon that's worth more than the halva, because then you're going to end up over-collecting. You're going to end up collecting more than you were really entitled to. So the Gemara assumes that the reason the lova writes this to the malva is that just in case the lova dies while this mashkon is still in his rishos, the malva will still have the ability to collect. Normally, the metalta diasmi is not meshuba to a balchov. If you have a lova dies and the yisomim have only metalta, they don't have karka, a balchov has nothing to collect from. So here, this malva is going to give back the mashkon every night. What if you die in your sleep? Then how am I ever going to get paid back? The pajamas are metaltalin. I'm not going to be able to get it back. So that's why they would write this. So time into kasav lehachi. The only reason he's able to collect from these sums is because they actually would write this language. Hey, lo kasav lehachi lo kanya. But if they did not write this language, the kinyan would not be binding. V'am Rabbi Yochanan mashkino veheshav la mashkon umeis shom tome al gabi vanav. But wait a second. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan tell us that if you take a mashkon from a lova and you return that mashkon and then the lova dies while he has the mashkon, so the malva could take that mashkon from the children of the lova? So you see that even if the lova does not write a shtar to the malva, you're still allowed to get paid from the yisomim. So why do they have to write this shtar? So it says, well, haniksiva ligiraon, this writing the shtar works just in case the mashkon goes down in value through the lova using it. If the lova would not be mechayiv himself in the shtar, the malva would only be able to collect that very mashkon, even though now it's worth less than the money the malva was owed. But by writing a shtar that corresponding to what this mashkon is worth at this moment is what I actually owe you, then even if it subsequently goes down in value, the malva is going to be able to take other metaltalim to compensate for that. He'll be able to take other metaltalim to get back the full value of that which he is owed. And then a fifth example of Dorish Lashon Hadyot, Rabbi Yossi, how you Dorish Lashon Hadyot. Titania, Rabbi Yossi, Omer, Makam Shag, Lassus Ksuba Milva, Gova Milva, that if they would assess the Nechasim that the woman would bring into the marriage from her father's house based on its true value. So if there is, if the husband dies, or if they get divorced, she could collect all of those nechasim based on the assessment in the shtar ksuba. And the Baal can collect at the Shas Nisun. He could demand from the father-in-law, make sure she brings this amount of value, because that, if that's the minhag, that they go with the exact amount, so that's what everyone's on the hook for. But lichbol kova mechza. But if the practice was that they would assess everything as double, they would write it as double of what it is, so then if it says she's bringing in $1,000, so the husband can only insist that she brings in $500, because it's understood that it's that everything is doubled. They would say it to make it look like to make it a more kavadik kind of thing, right? That's where our minhag of Mea Zekukim Kesef Tzarev came from. Then nobody had Mea Zekukim Kesef Tzarev. Everyone was poor. Jews were locked out of doing most of the businesses that other people were doing. We didn't have opportunities to so most people were poor, and they could never dream of Mei Zekukim Kesef Tzarev. But it makes it a more kavadika kind of ksuba. So they would write it, even though it didn't really, no one actually was bringing in that kind of money. So this already goes back to the days of the Tanoim, that they would double the amount. Narbaloi Gavutilta. The people from Naharvil would only be able to collect one-third, because that was their minhag. Mereimar Magvinami Shvacha. He would collect from the father of the daughter whatever was written in the ksuba, even though it was a place where they would assess it at twice its actual value. So how could you do that? Don't we say if the minhag is to be kofa that you can only collect mechza, lo kasha, where they actually did a kinyan on it, so then it's binding. The number that you actually put there is binding. Ravina He would write for his daughter, again, double what it actually was. So they said, come make a kinyan. No, you're not going to get me on that. If I'm going to make a kinyan, then I'm going to be held to the actual number. So if I'm making a kinyan, I'm not writing double the number. If I'm writing double the number, then I'm not making a kinyan, because I'm only going to write double if the understanding is that I don't have to pay double. So the Gemara now tells a story relating to this practice of doubling the amount in a ksuba. Who gavra? There was a guy. Before he died, he left instructions that they should give a nedunya of 400 zuz for the daughter in her ksuba. But the minig in that place was that they always doubled the assessment. So you don't know what he meant by that. So shalach ravacha brei de ravavi kamei de ravashi. Arba mea dinun timni mea? Or arba mea dinun zuze de inyan maasan? Did you mean 400 zuz, which was really 800 zuz, meaning that they should write 800 zuz and then the real value is 400 zuz? Or did you mean 400 zuz is the number you should write in the ksuba and what your real commitment to is 200 zuz? Some Ravashi chazinan. Some Ravashi says we have to look. Yamar havala arba mea zuze. If he says Havu, that you should give her Abramea Zuzi, so then it means that that's what should actually be given to her. Din and Timni Meya, then it means that that you should write 800. But if Yom Ksovula Abramea Zuzi, if he says write for her 400 Zuz, Din and Masa, then it means that it's really 200 Zuz. So Ikata Amri Amr Ravashi, others say that Ravashi said, we look at it a little differently, not whether he says Havu or Ksovu, but Chazina Niyamar Liksubasa Abramea Zuzi. If he says give 400 zuz lik subasa, so then it means to actually give 400 zuz and the inun timni meya, which means you're going to write 800, but it's going to be an actual 400. But viyamar big subasa, but if you say not for the ksuba but big subasa, then arba meya zuzi din masad, then you're not saying that you're actually giving 400 zuz. You're really only actually giving 200. It's big subasa. Someone told me that Rav Lichtenstein Zichron Levracha was medayik that the lashon in the Brich Shmei is the Siftach Libai Bi Oraisa, not Li Oraisa. That if it was Li Oraisa, it would mean that for Torah. But Bi Oraisa means that I'll come to an appreciation of the mitzvahs of Torah through the Torah. That through learning Torah, I'll appreciate each mitzvah of the Torah so much more. So that's the and I'll be mekayim the mitzvah so much better. The difference between a lit and a bit makes out all the difference. Velohi says the Gemara, though, that's not the din. Loshon Adamar liksubasa, loshon Adamar biksubasa, arbeh meazuzi di inun masan adamar havalastama. We assume that it's really a commitment of 200, and he's just using the language of 400 until he says, give her 400 zuz bistam, and he doesn't mention the ksuba at all. So then we assume that he really meant 400 zuz, it's really 800. I mean, then we assume he really meant 400. But once he uses the term ksuba, he's saying, you know, in ksuba language, that's what I'm really committing to. Ahu gavra, the kabbal arami chavre, a person received a field as a resource from someone else. Samri imovarna la yivnalach alfe zuze. He says, you know, if I don't work this field, I'll pay you 1,000 zuz. Meaning you can trust me, I'm going to do my job. So over Tilta, he did his job two-thirds. He worked two-thirds of the field. One-third of the field he just was lazy about and he didn't do anything with. So Armin Nardai said, Dinu hu diavle tlas meo tlas of a Tilta. He's got to pay 333 and 30, meaning he said he was going to pay 1,000 zuz if he doesn't work the field at all. There was one-third of the field he didn't work, so based on the ratio, he's got to pay one-third of 1,000 zuz. Rava Amar Asmachti Vasmachta Lokanya. Nah, he didn't really mean he was going to pay 1,000 zuz. He was speaking Balashun Guzma. He wasn't really committing to that. Asmachta Lokanya is not going to be bound to that. Why in our mission? We said that if the guy says, if I don't work the field, I'll pay you with the Meitav, and we take that seriously. So says Gemara, Hasam lo Kogazim. Hach, given to come Milsi Yisetu Guzma Bialmahu the Kogazim. Because in the case of our mission, he's saying, I would pay you what the field is supposed to produce. He's not saying some crazy number. It's what the field is expected to produce. But over here in Rava's case, he's saying 1,000. 1,000 zuz, that's got nothing to do with what the field is going to produce. So he's obviously just exaggerating. A guy received land and he was supposed to plant sesame seeds, which are apparently very expensive, but really weak in the karka. And instead, zarechiti, he planted wheat. Of the chiti kashumshmi, it turned out the karka produced wheat that are just as valuable as shumshmin. So it's a double benefit. It has the very pricey wheat, and it didn't ruin the karka. So some Rav Kana lemeim, Rav Menachdei kachsha da'ara. Rav Kana thought that the bala karka has to deduct from the aris the amount of the weakening of the field that didn't happen. So Amalei Rav Ashi l'Rav Kana. So Rav Ashi said, Amrin she kachsha ara v'lo l'chushmara. No, a person will say, I'd rather my karka be weakened and that I not be in a weakened position. Meaning, give me what the percentage that you're supposed to give me, what the field actually produced. There was another guy, that was supposed to plant sesame seeds in the field, zarechiti, and instead he planted wheat in the field. Avdechiti tfeim in shumshmi. The wheat that the field produced ended up being so much liach, it was worth more than sesame seeds could ever be sold for. So Savar Ravina lemeimar yavle shivcha de beni beni. So Ravina thought to say that the balakarka has to give the aris the increased value of chitim more than shumshmin, not to split that revach, because the aris was one that caused that shevach. So whatever the shumshmin, whatever the chitim is worth more than the shumshmin, that should all go to the farmer. He's the one that's responsible for that, because if he would have planted sesame seeds, it would have been worth less. So he should get all of the profits. So you think that it's just you that planted the wheat, that you're the one that made this happen? My land made it happen. And therefore, even though this field produced something that was more valuable than what we were expecting, we should split that extra value. The farmer himself does not get all of that extra value. Okay, Beis Hashem, tomorrow we'll begin with the stories of the Iska. Machlokas about Iska. Is that what we're up to? Yeah, we'll do that tomorrow. Good Yom Tov, everybody.